I hope you enjoy this talk. These talks are always offered freely so that no one is ever denied access to these teachings, and your support really makes a big difference. Dana is the ancient Pali word for spontaneous generosity of heart. If you feel inspired to support these talks by offering Dana, you can do so by visiting my website at www.mindfulvalley.com. Thank you so much. So tonight, since it's nearing Easter this month, I've been thinking a lot about my dear Italian grandmother, who sadly I lost a few years ago, but she was 97, was her time, and she was a very devout Catholic, and she taught me in secret, actually, how to kneel down next to my bed and pray. And the reason she had to teach me in secret was that when I was little, my parents were very young. They had me in their teens, and so they were very young hippies. And in the 1960s and 70s especially, they wanted to give up on religion and basically party and drink and have lots of sex. So my grandmother taught me in secret, and she taught me in my uncle's room, which, interestingly, always smelled like patchouli because he was trying to cover up the pot smell. But I didn't know that I was little, right? So that smell is always bonded with me praying with my grandmother. And so I love that smell dearly, and I wear it today. I wear patchouli sometimes because it reminds me of praying with my grandmother. And I think of her often, actually, whenever I sit down to meditate, you know, when I make a daily effort to connect with my heart, and especially when I'm offering up the loving kindness or metta prayer, I think of my grandmother, because for almost 100 years, you know, she's 97, since she was really little, she would sit for about an hour or more, right, in silence, silently reciting the rosary. So she was meditating, and her practice was really translated in a way, was a form of metta, right? Because she spent that entire time really offering out prayers for every single person in her life and nurturing her heart in that way, right? And throughout her entire life, my grandmother showed me through her own living example, you know, what the Buddha meant by bodhicitta, awakened heart mind. You know, she really kind of exemplified that for me. And the teacher Jack Kornfeld has said about Jesus and Buddha, when we listen deeply to their words, we find that in many ways they speak with one heart. They speak with one heart. And so even though my grandmother did not at all, as you can imagine, she did not understand why in the world I would want to become a Buddhist teacher, right? We loved one another fiercely, and I feel like we often both spoke with one heart. And so tonight, in her honor, I thought it might be interesting to explore what I believe are very close similarities to what these two great spiritual teachers taught, right? So before I start, though, I first want to say that the spiritual and transformative teachings that I have received from both traditions really have very little to do with actual beliefs, okay? Or in other words, all those things that are mostly unknown to those of us who are living, right? Instead, the teachings that have resonated for me have had much more to do with our actual conduct, right? Our actions, the quality of our mind and heart right now in the present, in this actual life that we are experiencing, which, you know, for all we know, may be our last. We don't know, right? And by the way, even if we are given one more chance, right, to go to heaven or enter, you know, what some of the Buddhist traditions consider the six realms of existence, you know, or reincarnate, we don't know. Don't we want to live lives or lead lives right now that are going to lead us to more happiness for ourselves and others? Really, that's the point, right? Right in this life. And again, I always come back to that idea of we really just don't know, but we fight about it all the time, right? No, I believe this and I believe that. We don't know. Many of you may recall this famous Zen story about a Zen master who was asked by one of his students, you know, what happens, master, after death? And the master just kind of shrugged and said, I don't know. And the student was really infuriated. He said, you're a Zen master. You know, you're supposed to tell us these things. You know, aren't you a Zen master? And the Zen master said, yes, but I'm not a dead one. So, you know, in the very same way, the Buddha too often, very often, refused to answer people whenever they asked him things like, you know, is there a life beyond this one, sir, Lord? And, or is there a universe, is the universe infinite? Or is there a supreme being? You know, or is there reincarnation? He refused to answer so many of these questions, actually, that they were eventually categorized into what became known as the 14 unanswerable questions, right? Which I won't go into tonight, but in not answering these, the Buddha was making a really important point by not answering them. His point was that when we allow ourselves to get all caught up in the more metaphysical questions, when we want an absolute definitive answer, we want to figure it out, we want an answer, what we're doing, in essence, is distracting ourselves from how we're living our actual lives. Okay? It's a distraction. The Buddha tells us, whether the world is finite or infinite, limited or unlimited, the problem of your liberation remains the same. The problem of your liberation remains the same. And even more than that, the Buddha warned, really, that there's a real danger in spending so much time grasping at and then grasping onto the answers to these questions, right? So for instance, you might notice that whenever we really grasp onto any belief about something and take it as solid fact, right, it tends to contract into a kind of mental holding on, a clinging, right, which can then, of course, easily turn into anger and aggression and even hatred and cruelty. So we're grabbing on so hard, you know, and especially hatred and cruelty towards those who question those beliefs or don't believe the same thing, right? And this could be with anything. So you might even recall right now all the violence and wars that have occurred over the centuries, again, over beliefs that we as living beings really can't know for sure. That's the sad part. In the famous Malankaputta Sutta, where the Buddha is talking to a man with that same name, this man is asking him all of those type of questions. And the Buddha explains why he doesn't want to spend time answering them. I'm going to read what he said, because I think it's important. He said, so, remember what is undeclared by me as undeclared, and what is declared by me as declared. And why are they undeclared by me? Because they are not connected with a goal, are not fundamental to the holy life. They do not lead to disenchantment, dissipation, cessation, calming, direct knowledge, self-awakening, unbinding. That is why they are undeclared by me. Talking about those questions. And he goes on to explain, and what is declared by me? This is stress. This is declared by me. This is the origination of stress, is declared by me. This is the cessation of stress, is declared by me. This is the path of practice leading to the cessation of stress, is declared by me. And why are they declared by me? Because they are connected with the goal and are fundamental to the holy life. They lead to disenchantment, dispassion, cessation, calming, direct knowledge, self-awakening, unbinding. That is why they are declared by me. Right? So he's really delineating what he's going to answer and why here. And again, he's really telling us that the teachings have nothing to do with what we're believing or not believing. And they don't even have anything to do about whether we achieve some state of enlightenment, which can also be something we get caught up in, or maybe the higher jhana states or the bliss states or Buddhahood or immortality, you know. What matters is what's in our hearts in this life, right? All the rest of it is distraction, can become distraction. So if we're showing up with a closed heart that's filled with greed or aversion, hatred, delusion, we're going to suffer. And we're going to create more suffering for ourselves and others. That's just a simple truth. That's declared by the Buddha. That's just a simple truth. If, on the other hand, we train ourselves to show up with hearts and minds that act out of a sense of kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity, you know, when we live from those dwelling places, what are considered the divine abodes within ourselves, you know, we're going to be happier people and we're going to create and spread more happiness and joy. That's also a kind of a, just a simple fact. So what I'm getting to is that it's really simple, actually. And everything, all the teachings have to do with sila, which is moral conduct, you know, along with letting go of a sense of self or selfishness, you know, which is also exactly what the teachings of Jesus show us, those things, right? And I want to get into that. And so before I do, I'll go into a little background, just a little bit. So as most of you know, Buddhism began in Bodh Gaya, India, about 3,000 miles from Jerusalem, about 6 centuries before Christianity began. And of course, the Buddha and Jesus were both born into very different backgrounds, almost exact opposites, actually. So the Buddha was born into wealth, right? He was born a prince. And he ended up leaving his wife and his newborn son and all his possessions and even his inheritance to go live a life as a wandering monk, okay, a wandering ascetic. And Jesus, as I'm sure is no surprise to anybody here, was born into poverty. And he was born as a refugee in an occupied land that was stewing with revolutionary fire. And he became a carpenter. Okay. And yet, even with these different backgrounds, both ended up being radical peacemakers, spiritual revolutionaries, who both saw the great need for a shift in morality. Think about that, right? That's what both of them were looking for, a shift in consciousness, in morality. And so they both were looking for, seeking out this great need for more kindness and compassion and understanding in the world. Okay? They were also, again, both preaching a radical shift in consciousness, a new way of seeing things. And if you recall, both of their teachings have been described as a light in the darkness. Both of them, right? A light in the darkness, a new way of seeing things. And, you know, when we think of the Buddha, we can think of the word enlightenment. And of course, Jesus was famously known as the light of the world, right? I'm also reminded of that beautiful Christian hymn, "I was once blind, but now I see. I was once blind, but now I see." So these past few years especially, what I've been hearing from people of all faiths is that what we're facing right now in our country, this country in particular, is a renewed need for that kind of light, right? Many spiritual leaders and others have been saying that it feels like right now we are experiencing a kind of crisis of ethics, a crisis of our sense of morality. In fact, many of my own teachers have been speaking about a call Pope Francis has made for a revolution of tenderness. God just brings tears to my eyes, just a revolution of tenderness. Tenderness. This call stemmed from a talk he gave back in 2013, actually, during his first pastoral trip outside of Rome to the Italian island of Lampedusa, where hundreds had died while they were trying to emigrate into the country. Hundreds had died. And in this talk, the Pope called out what he called the globalization of indifference, which characterizes a kind of self-centered society that lacks compassion on many levels. But in this case, he was talking directly about the immigrants and the refugees. And this is what the Pope told the crowd. He said, "We are a society which has forgotten how to weep, how to experience compassion, suffering with others. Let us ask the Lord for the grace to weep over our indifference, to weep over the cruelty of our world, of our own hearts, and of all those who in anonymity make social and economic decisions which open the door to tragic situations like this. Has anyone wept today? Has anyone wept in our world?" I've been doing a lot of the... Just anybody else just weeping over, you know, it's just hard to take. So right now, what seems less important in our spiritual community is our differences. And what seems more important is nurturing this quality of heart that both the Buddha and Jesus were pointing us to, that light of the heart. The qualities of kindness and compassion, you know, seeing others as ourselves, you know, not putting ourselves above as more important in some way, not separating ourselves into us versus them, you know. And if any of you are interested in reading more about this topic, the Dalai Lama, through his translator, actually wrote a very enlightening book called The Good Heart, A Buddhist Perspective on the Teachings of Jesus. Okay, it's called A Good Heart. Just remember that. It's easy to remember. And in it, he speaks to this common quality of heart that is the basis of almost every spiritual tradition. He says, "According to my own experience, all of the world's major religious traditions provide a common language and message upon which we can build genuine understanding." So in their own time, Jesus and Buddha both gave us very similar moral guidance in the form of the Buddhist precepts and also the Christian commandments. They're very similar, actually. And basically, in essence, what both of these were really addressing was a question of, if we are all brothers and sisters, a kind of human family, how do we love one another, right? How do we love one another? How do we take care of one another? How do we live together in harmony? You know, this is how you do it. How do we do it? You know? And a core message in both teachings seems to be, when we take care of others, we are also, in essence, taking care of ourselves, right? This is how a civil society, civilization, works the best. when we aren't all simply focused on what is in it for me, what's in it for my family, or even what's in it for my country. You know, we recognize that we really are one family. A few years ago, actually, Pope Francis addressed a large pilgrimage of Catholics and Lutherans from Germany. And again, he was speaking about the refugees. And he said, in putting ourselves at the service of the neediest, we will experience that we are already united. Right? Putting ourselves at the service of the neediest. And as the Buddha taught, the more we practice really taking a bare, honest, real look within ourselves to discover what causes suffering and what causes happiness, we realize that any time we do something that might cause another harm or in some way cuts another or separates another from our hearts, even in the tiniest, smallest ways, we ourselves suffer, right? And then as we continue to look deeply into our own hearts and minds through this practice, the more clearly we can recognize and see into all our beliefs and behaviors, and the more we know in our own hearts and bodies when we're doing something that is morally wrong. You know, we'll know it. We'll be able to see it clearly in our minds, and, you know, we can also feel it in our bodies. In our hearts. And because it hurts, we can no longer do it. Right? That's the practice. It's not because some authority told us not to do it, but because we actually just don't want to suffer. You know, we can't carry it with us in our hearts. Our hearts literally won't let us carry it if we really look deeply. Okay. And as we go even deeper, we also start to recognize and actually experience the truth of anatta, non-separation, no self, right? The sense that we are one another, that we are interdependent, and that we all suffer in the same ways, and that our happiness depends on the happiness of others, right? So these are the Buddha's teachings, but Jesus taught the very same thing, right? Didn't he? In the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus said, if those who lead you say to you, look, the kingdom is in the sky, then the birds of the sky will get there first. If they say it is in the sea, then the fish will get there first. Rather, the kingdom is inside of you, and it is outside of you. When you come to know yourselves, then you will become known. And you will realize that it is you who are the children of the living Father. But if you will not know yourselves, then you dwell in poverty, and it is you who are that poverty. So, in so many ways, again, the teachings of both Buddha and Jesus emphasized how we do this, how we can learn to see ourselves as one and take care of one another, right? They both taught the common language of the heart, as the Dalai Lama has said. And so, for instance, they both advocated nonviolence and peace, not war. You know, radical peacemakers, right? They were both pacifists in a way, right? Some of you may recall Jesus saying, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. They both begged us all not to kill or steal or take or covet what is not ours, or lie or use false speech, alternative facts. I don't think that was in the Bible, but don't do that, you know, and also not to abuse our sexuality, you know. They urge us to avoid the corruption of wealth and power, both of them. In fact, they asked us to not only let go of our attachment to wealth and power, but to help the poor and the suffering, right? From Luke, Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. From the Dhammapada, let us live most happily, possessing nothing. Let us feed on joy like radiant gods. Is that nice? Let us feed on joy like radiant gods. They both urged us to abolish slavery, racism, caste systems. They both taught us to love our neighbors, even the ones we consider enemies. Right? And I also love that they both taught us not to judge, and both were actually criticized very harshly for not judging more, which I find interesting, right? They were criticized for it. So the Buddha, for instance, was criticized for flouting social convention by, quote, consorting with thieves and murderers. And Jesus, as we all know, was attacked for breaking bread with sinners and whores, right? Judge more. They also both taught women, which in their day was completely radical. And there are also two stories from each tradition that I often like to think about that exemplify this common theme of recognizing our shared humanity, our oneness. And one is from the Buddha Suttas, and the other one is from the Bible. And in the Buddha Sutras, the famous story, many of you may know this one, is about a young mother who comes to the Buddha with just crazy grief. She's overwhelmed by grief because she's lost her infant son, right? And just like Jesus back in his day, the Buddha was often thought to have special powers. And so this mother was desperate for her son to be healed and brought back to life. So she went to see the Buddha. Please, please help my, please bring my son back to life. And so he told her that he would heal her son, but she had to do one thing for him. She needed to go into the city and bring him back a mustard seed from a house where no one had ever died. Right? Go bring me that. Go find that. Just a mustard seed. And so, of course, eventually, after days and days of searching, the young mother finally realizes and understands that she is not alone in her grief and her suffering, and that death and grieving are just part of our common human existence, right? In the famous Bible story, when a crowd gathers and prepares to kill a woman accused of adultery by stoning her to death, Jesus famously invites anyone who is without sin to hurl that first stone. And as I'm sure most of you all know, one by one, they all turn away. And so what both of these teachings are pointing to is that we are all human. Surprise, We all suffer. We all grieve. We all feel pain in the exact same way. We will all eventually face death. And we are all perfectly imperfect. We're all imperfect, right? None of us here is sinless. Anybody? Right? Right? I knew John was going to raise his hand. Except for John. And the Buddhist terminology for that would be, none of us has not done harm, right? We've all done harm. So this is why both of these spiritual teachers urge us and even beg us to help one another through this. We need to help each other through this thing called life, to bring more kindness and compassion and joy and peace into the world and not cause any more harm. There's enough pain and suffering, right? So how can we cause less harm and bring more happiness and joy? How can we see one another as ourselves and abandon our selfishness and become selfless, right? As most of you know here, the central core teaching of the Buddha is about letting go of ego, of self, anatta, right? And learning to rest in natural awareness, which is often called our Buddha nature, which is considered vast and kind and compassionate, our true nature, right? And Jesus taught about letting go of one's worldly self-importance and filling yourself with God, the Holy Spirit, of being in some way reborn. Okay. And Paul, the first Christian writer, wrote, "I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me." Both the Buddha and Jesus offered a similar diagnosis for the typical human condition, which is especially fear, right? Human condition, fear, greed, and in the Christian tradition, blindness. It's called blindness. In the Buddhist teachings, fear, greed, and blindness can be translated as what are called the three poisons, right? Aversion, clinging, and delusion. Those are the three poisons. So fear, for instance, leads us to aversion, anger, hatred, envy. You know, all these ways that we try to protect a self. Okay. The poison of greed is a way of clinging, grasping, wanting things only for a self. Right? Just, it's not sharing with others. I want it all for me or my family or my country or whatever it is. And of course, blindness or delusion, as it's called in the Buddhist teachings, is not recognizing that this preoccupation with a sense of self is what causes us to suffer. Right? So the Buddha just says it a different way, right? I often like to think of that bumper sticker that you see around a lot, which is, "What would Jesus do?" And I like to always translate that and replace it with, "What would Buddha do?" And I assume the answers are always going to be exactly the same. Aren't they? They really are, right? And they both imply, what is the wisest, most compassionate response or action right now? Right, don't they? What's the wisest, most compassionate thing? That's always the answer. If any of you are interested, there's this great small book called Jesus and the Buddha, the Parallel Sayings. And it's written by Marcus Borg, who's a Christian scholar. And it has a foreword by one of my teachers, Jack Kornfeld. And it lists hundreds of sayings from the Buddha and Jesus and sets them side by side. It's really fascinating. I'll read you a couple of these. Jesus, a foolish man which built his house on sand. Buddha, perishable is a city built on sand. Jesus, therefore, confess your sins one to another and pray one for another that you may be healed. Buddha, confess before the world the sins you have committed. Jesus, do to others as you would have them do to you. Buddha, consider others as yourself. Jesus, if anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. Buddha, if anyone should give you a blow with his hand, with a stick, or with a knife, you should abandon all desires and utter no evil words. Jesus, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Buddha, let your thoughts of boundless love pervade the whole world." In the book's introduction, the author writes, "I have sometimes said that if the Buddha and Jesus were to meet, neither would try to convert the other, not because they would regard such an effort as hopeless, but because they would recognize one another." Yeah. Jack Kornfeld tells a really similar story of an old Zen master who met a famous Christian abbot in an airport in the United States. And it was a kind of a chance encounter. They didn't know the other was going to be there. And there wasn't a translator around to be found. So they just sat together for the whole hour, smiling and holding hands. That's sweet. The author of Jesus and Buddha, the Parallel Sayings, wrote, "Jesus and the Buddha were teachers of wisdom. And wisdom is more than ethics. It consists of fundamental ways of seeing and being. Wisdom is not just about moral behavior, but about the center, the place from which moral perception and moral behavior flow. So in the same way, the current day representation of the Buddha, the Dalai Lama, has said that in terms of living in this world, we need to make a true and courageous effort to stay in direct contact with this center, with, of course, our wise hearts, our center, and not be led by our anger or our fear. The Dalai Lama has said, the more motivated you are by love, the more fearless and free your actions will be. The more motivated you are by love, the more fearless and free your actions will be. A few years ago, I heard this wonderful radio interview with Congressman John Lewis, the civil rights activist and Baptist, who, of course, marched alongside Dr. Martin Luther King. And I'll read you this part of the interview. In it, he said this: in the moral sense, can say in the bosom of every human being, there's a spark of the divine. So you don't have a right as a human to abuse that spark of the divine in your fellow human being. We, he and Dr. King, from time to time would discuss, if you see someone attacking you, beating you, spitting on you, you have to think of that person. Years ago, that person was an innocent child, innocent little baby. And so what happened? Did something go wrong? Did the environment? Did someone teach that person to hate, to abuse others? So you try to appeal to the goodness of every human being, and you don't give up. You never give up on anyone. We're supposed to be strong, but love is strong. Love is powerful. The movement created what I like to call a nonviolent revolution. It was love at its best. It's one of the highest forms of love. That you beat me, you arrest me, you take me to jail, you almost kill me, but in spite of that, I'm gonna still love you. I know Dr. King used to joke sometimes and say things like, just love the hell out of everybody. Just love them. Hard to do right now, right? Just love them. And Jesus spoke of this type of love and nonviolence, and so did the Buddha. In a famous and maybe disturbing sutta, the Buddha tells his monks, even, O monks, should robbers and murderers saw through your limbs and joints, whoso gave way to anger would not be following my advice. For thus ought you to train yourself. Undisturbed shall our mind remain. No evil words shall escape our lips. Friendly and full of sympathy shall we remain, with heart full of love and free from any hidden malice. And that person we penetrate with loving thoughts, wide, deep, boundless, freed from anger and hatred. And again, here you might recall the last hours of Jesus, who, of course, endured the agony and trial of being stripped naked and then forced to carry the cross that he was going to be nailed to and die on. And he did all of this with great patience and endurance and the willingness to bear the unbearable without any sense of blame or ill will. That was his teaching to us. Father, he said, forgive them, for they know not what they do. They know not what they do. And finally, the Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh, in another book I'll throw out there, which is Living Buddha, Living Christ, he talks about how both teachers are urging us to help them to continue to live through us, through the teachings, to be a living, breathing, walking example of these two teachers, right? Let it live through us in the present moment. He wrote, in Buddhism, faith means confidence in our and others' abilities to wake up to our deepest capacity of living and understanding. In Christianity, faith means trust in God, the one who represents love, understanding, dignity, and truth. When we are still looking deeply and touching the source of our true wisdom, we touch the living Buddha and the living Christ in ourselves and in each person we meet. Okay. So I think I'm going to end there for time and offer you a brief, very brief meditation. So if you want to just settle. And as always, just take a nice deep breath in. Deep breath out. Couple of rounds of these. And for this practice, I'm going to invite all of you to place one hand or both on the heart. Connect with that center. That center, the heart. Breathing in. You might even imagine breathing right into the heart. Writer Donna Seaman wrote, "If there is to be understanding, compassion, and peace in the world, spiritual teachers must learn to honor the jewels or best values at the heart of diverse traditions and to keep their own alive by interpreting them in the light of the here and now." So with that in mind, I'd like to invite you to take some time to reflect on the jewels or best values at the heart of the tradition or traditions that you've been taught. What are the jewels or best values at the heart, at the tradition or traditions that you've been taught? What are the jewels? And as you bring each of those jewels up into the light, you might consider, how can I keep these alive in my own heart by interpreting them in the light of the here and now? How can I keep these alive in my own heart? How can I be a living, breathing example of these teachings? Finally, just listening to these words from Thich Nhat Hanh, who tells us, when our beliefs are based on our direct experience of reality and not on notions offered by others, no one can remove these beliefs from us. When our beliefs are based on our own direct experience of reality and not on notions offered by others, no one can remove these beliefs from us.